Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Rod Chappell, president of the Missouri NAACP. Hello, Rod.
Hello. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here. So we thought this was a great opportunity to sit down with you in light of many of the protests and things going on around the city, around the state, and the nation, just to sit down with you and have a conversation. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. So let's go back to, like, 2017. Mm-hmm. The state NAACP issued a Missouri travel advisory over concerns whether travelers' civil rights would be respected in the state. What were you seeing then that drove this decision to issue the advisory, and do those concerns still exist today?
Well, absolutely. The travel advisory from the NAACP is still in effect. It was the first one that's ever been issued for a state anywhere for the NAACP. Without a doubt, there are other civil rights violations happening in other parts of the country that are noteworthy. But in Missouri, we saw a long-term trend where criminal justice issues related to being able to drive on the streets, the vehicle stops report, or driving while black, just showed that we were getting worse each year without making any real changes. A lack of leadership from state government at the top levels, from the executive branch, an inability for the judiciary to fix these issues or even hear them, and then ultimately the lack of moral courage for local leaders to actually take a stance on those and move them forward. And we saw those issues in many different areas, whether it's healthcare, where healthcare outcomes were really pretty bad for African Americans or blacks. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Boot Hill, it's about as it is in a third world country,
yeah,
which you wouldn't expect in the United States.
No.
You just wouldn't anticipate that. The educational outcomes, we ended up with more kids being shuffled into the juvenile system, which led to the criminal justice system, as opposed to going to higher ed. And so even if you look at those numbers today, they're really, really bad.
Yeah.
And then finally, Governor Greitens signed what was Senate Bill 43, which literally shut the door for people who are working anywhere in the state to bring a discrimination, retaliation, or harassment claim against the person that did it. So you could still sue the business. Say you worked at a restaurant. You could sue the restaurant, but you couldn't sue the person that did it.
Hmm.
There's something fundamentally wrong about that. And
yeah,
that was one of the straws that broke the camel's back.
So where does that law stand now? Was it overturned? Or
no.
It still exists?
It's still the law.
Wow.
Yeah. It is the most restrictive civil rights enforcement measure, because that's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we went outside and someone ran into the back of us, right, we wouldn't have to go to some administrative agency to first figure out, is this a legitimate claim? And then, two, give us something that we could take to court. Well, if it's a civil rights claim, you still have to go through that administrative agency. But then, at the end of the day, you don't even get a right to sue. You can't go to court. You can't do anything with it in
Wow.
state court.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the vehicle stop reports. We talked to you back in 2018 about those reports that showed black drivers were 85% more likely to be stopped than a traffic stop. In 2019, we just recently did a story, the rate was 76%. Back in 2018, you had said that you'd planned to talk to Governor Parson,
mm-hmm.
Who is a former sheriff, as well as then Attorney General Josh Hawley, to look at how to rectify the situation. How were those overtures met?
Yeah, so we were able to talk with Governor Parsons. No resolution, no plan, no prospective action. And that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. I would anticipate that with his experience that he would be able to come up with a much better narrative to talk with law enforcement around the state and take
mm-hmm.
a leadership role in that. Senator Hawley now was not available for that discussion.
Okay.
And so looking forward to talking with Eric Schmidt. With any luck, we'll be able to do that within the next week.
Okay. At the time, you acknowledged that it's a large, complicated issue that can't be solved in an hour, I believe is how you had phrased it. So are we making progress as a state? We see that we went from 85% to 76%. That from the face, it looks like we're making some progress. How will we know when we're really making progress?
Sure. I think one metric would be that And I know that there are lots of different arguments that if you live in a predominantly minority community, then you're going to have a number of more interactions with minorities through the police. Okay, that's fair enough. But if you live in a rural community where there's not a lot of minorities, then that number should also be at least proportionate, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think when we get back down to looking at everybody can travel the roads and expecting that people who are going to be pulled over at any given time are going to be representative of the community, right? And I think that you can look across Missouri, and depending on which place you look at, being almost 100% more likely to be pulled over is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what areas of the state do you see that being the case?
Oh, sure. You know, there's a great schematic, and I can get that for us, but several places like Florissant, mm-hmm. they are very high. Mm-hmm. You know, if you imagine, there are some places right outside of St. Louis. Jefferson City's pretty good. You know, pretty good. Mm-hmm. We've been trending better, but we're still not proportionate by any means.
Right.
Springfield has made some improvements. If you looked at Kansas City, their numbers are ridiculous.
Mm.
Yeah. I have many friends in law enforcement, and they are good people. But the programs that these agents or these law enforcement folks are put in really puts them into an odd box where they say, we want to do like a saturation stop, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're just going to pull over everybody that they can, and they'll look for a reason to do that.
Right.
Well, you know, you and I know that if they want to find a reason to pull you over, they will.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then what happens after that is kind of up to everybody who's present in that situation.
Right.
Ought not do that based on color.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're thinking, well, we need to do this in a particular neighborhood to keep crime down, go after the crime. You know, we were just talking, or maybe we'll talk about Tory Sanders. That's a murder that's never been charged in Missouri. Let's focus on that. Right?
Yeah.
There's serious crimes going on beyond traffic stuff, and there's a better way to get a hold of people.
Okay. Yeah, we will get to Tory here in just a moment. So this year, Attorney General Schmidt said that next year's reports are going to reflect changes in how they collect the data for the report. Mm-hmm. He said the changes are designed to improve the quality of the data. Do you perceive there to be a problem with how the data is gathered, or do you think these changes can make the report more useful as a tool to address the problem?
No. So just to be very, very candid and frank, there is a policing problem,
okay.
Not a data problem.
Okay.
While there are a number of agencies that do not provide the data, and the NAACP is in the process of writing each of those right now to ask for the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just as a regular sunshine request. We'll see how that works out. It might end up with them all getting sued for failure to provide it. But they've got an obligation to give it. So I think that we ought to start with the Attorney General insisting that the agencies who are responsible for providing information do so. Before we start looking at changes in the information, law enforcement has requested, oh, we need to change it from this to that to relate some different nuances that they would like to see. At the end of the day, we need to look at who's getting pulled over and why, right? And I can see that, you know, people of color are being pulled over way too much.
Yeah. Okay. So 2 weeks ago, George Floyd died while in police custody in Minneapolis after a police officer kneeled on his neck while Floyd pleaded for air. Following his death, protests erupted across the nation and the world in response to charges of police brutality against him, as well as other black Americans, as well as just structural racism.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, though, the Floyd case has some striking similarities to the case you mentioned, the Tory Sanders case. Last week, the Missouri NAACP and black lawmakers called for a new investigation into the death of Tory. Can you share the details of what happened to Sanders and what you're seeking to happen now?
Absolutely. Somewhere around the time of May the 4th of 2017, Tory Sanders, who is a Tennessee resident, was driving at night. He had some kind of a argument with his spouse, and was just driving to clear his head. Well, took a wrong turn, took that dog leg out of Tennessee, came up into the Boot Hill, and ran out of gas. At some point, he called his mom, said, hey, mom, I'm out of gas. What do I do? Well, she said, okay, get somebody to give you a ride to the Walmart. Look for some law enforcement. Maybe they'll do that for you. So he ends up having two encounters with law enforcement. The first time, they just left him wherever he was at. The second time, they said, oh, he's acting weird. So they did not arrest him, but they took him to jail.
Okay.
Odd, right?
Yeah.
So they take him to jail. They put him in a cell.
But he was still not under arrest.
Still not under arrest. No crime's been committed. Right. They say, well, we'll bring in some mental health professionals to have a look at him. And the mental health professional comes in. They say, he's okay. That's when things really get weird, because their story is that he refused to leave the jail cell, although we know that he called his mom from one of their phones saying, Mom, they're trying to kill me. And then, you know, the officer gets back on the phone and says, no, we're not. Everything's fine. Well, Corey Hutchison, who was the sheriff at that time, comes in with riot gear and I forget the exact number of people, somewhere between 6 and 10, into a little bitty cell. And they tase him and they pepper spray him. They choke him and they beat him. And ultimately, Corey Hutchison ends up with his knee on Corey Sanders' neck, has it there. And one of his co-workers says, hey, move your knee so I can check his pulse. Hutchison says, no, I'm good. That's the testimony that's in the case. That's in the civil case right now. Never charged. At the time, Eric Greitens, the then governor, said we're going to have a full and transparent investigation. I had conversations myself with him about that. Never happened. We didn't get any of the information related to the Highway Patrol investigation, which the FBI participated in. Josh Hawley said that he was going to prosecute the case, make sure that justice was brought for this family. The mother is still looking for justice. We're hoping that Attorney General Eric Schmidt will pick up the issue and prosecute. The local prosecutor, Mr. Cann, C-A-N-N, refuses to prosecute because one of the jailers is related to one of the people in his office, so he says he has a conflict of interest, and so he turned it over to the Attorney General's office. In the NAACP's view and the Black Caucus's view, we believe that an investigation has been committed, and we need to be looking at prosecution. They can either do it at the Attorney General's office, or they could turn it over to the federal government and let them do it. But one way or another, you cannot let a murder occur while in the police custody in this way and not have any charges filed.
So where do we go from here on this? I mean, where's it at now?
Oh, sure. So we've been able to talk with Attorney General Schmidt. He says he's looking at it. I'm looking for an answer from him this week. If not, then we'll have to talk more about how we're going to get justice for Mr. Sanders.
Okay. So as we look back on this conversation we've had so far about the travel advisory, the traffic stop reports, a case of alleged police brutality, where do we go from here? What could and should we be doing collectively first, and then individually first, to confront and eradicate this structural racism that exists?
Yes. You know, I think that we need to, collectively, on November the 3rd, there's going to be a big election. And that's not just at the national level for presidents and all that stuff. We should be able to figure that out. But on the local level and on the state level, we need people that represent our values. Right. And so if we believe that the rule of law as an American is something that is intrinsically valuable to all people, then we've got to support that and find politicians that support it. So right now we have politicians who either don't support it by passing legislation that allows discrimination. It legalizes discrimination, saying you can't go to circuit court or you can't seek legal redress. And that if you are a person of color, there are going to be situations where you can't get justice in the criminal justice system, right? Mm-hmm. So we need politicians that will support that. And then get rid of the politicians who won't take a stand, right? Either you're for it or against it. And, you know, as Harry Truman said, the buck stops here. You need to be what you're about, okay? Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of politicians who are kind of willy-nilly. They don't want to cause any waves.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about in America. We're talking about the rule of law. If we don't have that, our whole democracy will fail. And I think that that's part of what's got people out in the streets now. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic with African Americans being on the leading edge of death for COVID-19. But at the same time, people are willing to risk their lives because we still believe that America is a place that is a place for everybody. And this is pretty much the last stand. Time is up. Nobody's waiting on any politician to come save us anymore. Mm-hmm. We're going to get some new politicians. And if they don't do it, then I'm not sure what state America will be in. Missouri, this is a time when we can really take hold of those same values on a personal level, mm-hmm. find organizations and entities within our communities or within the state or sometimes within the nation that have tentacles into the state that will have meaningful change. We all know that discrimination and harassment happens. It's mm-hmm. a problem. When it happens in schools and you get kids calling each other names, they say, oh, they're just kids. When it happens in the workplace, they say, oh, well, they didn't mean it like that. Mm-hmm. Well, the truth is that if you say a derogatory term, you did mean it, right?
Right.
If you direct it at a person, if you say it in general, that's something that you were espousing. And if you don't think that's right, we ought not do that. We can act a lot better. I look at religious leaders like, I forget the name of the archbishop that had a great statement on discrimination just this past week. But we need our religious leaders to step forward and say that this is fundamentally wrong. And if you're a person of faith, we need to get back to those faithful tenets.
Right.
And in a way that we can live that faith and demonstrate that to our kids. Because ultimately, that's the example and that's the future and the hope that we have. If we continue to go on, we can all but assure that our kids and our grandkids, as we go down this road, are going to keep confronting the same problem and these ugly truths that say that these folks are better than those folks, or these folks can have these rights and privileges, but those folks get less or none at all. And sometimes they may even lose their lives,
right,
and have no redress. That's not the America that anybody ever envisioned, not for us.
No.
So I think now's the time that we take hold of it.
Yeah. You know, one thing that strikes me as you're talking, I'm thinking about, I had a reporter here once who, his son was black, mm-hmm. and this was during the time of Ferguson, uh-huh. when it was going on, and this reporter really struggled with what was going on, and I never really understood why, till one day we had a conversation, mm-hmm. and as a father, he expected at some point, you know, he was going to be married. Mm-hmm. And his concern was that his son would be in a situation that he was more in danger.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can't compare, for instance, I know you're a father,
mm-hmm.
you know, your sons, yeah. when I send my son out,
uh-huh.
there are things that I don't have to worry about that potentially you do.
Yeah.
So kind of, to me, it goes to a level of empathy there, you
sure.
know? So fathers have a connection, just...
Absolutely.
Pardon my rabbit trail here.
No.
But fathers have a connection. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a shared understanding of a responsibility as a father.
That's right.
What are some things that I wouldn't understand about you as a father that you have to be concerned about when your sons, who are, they're middle school age, I think?
Middle school, yeah.
But
yeah.
when they get to be drivers, when they get to be young adults,
yes.
what are things that me, as a white father, wouldn't understand that you're facing as a black father?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the standard situations that I think every dad could relate to is, you know, especially when they're driving, I'm 50 now, but I still remember what it was like to be a young man.
Yeah.
You know, like to go fast, like to drive their cars. We
yep.
want them to be safe,
yep.
right? Don't want them to hurt themselves or anybody else. If they're going to a pool, we want to make sure that they're swimming with a buddy,
yep.
right? That there's a lifeguard there. At school, we want to make sure that they get treated fairly, that there's a good opportunity for education, and that if something goes wrong, you know, we'll step in and do something about it. You know, for a black father, the issues that I have to face, and I think that not just me, but any person of color,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, when they're driving in the car, it's not just don't go fast and watch out for the other driver. You have to watch out for the police.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for you.
Right.
You know, there is some portion in there where they go from being cute and cuddly. And as much as I love my boys, I know that they're going to step out that door someday and somebody's going to look at them and say, hey, he's got on that hood. What's that about? Why has yep. he got on that hood? You know, they won't see the guy that likes to draw or play video games or play the ukulele of all things, right?
right.
they're going to perceive him as being some threat,
yeah.
you know? And so when he goes to the pool, you know, whether it's another child or whether it's some adult, you know, is he going to be mistreated? Are they calling him names,
right.
you know? And
right.
the same thing at school, whether it's his playmates out there on the tarmac, right? Or teachers who have some feeling about his level of preparation. Or question, as we had to deal with in the past, about whether or not he actually did the work. And, you know, now his mother is very serious about this academic stuff.
Yes.
As am I, but she's a front line. And so the idea that somebody would be doing his homework for him just kind of really upsets everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's that same thing that carries over in so many different ways. So whether you're on the road or whether you're in some social interaction or whether you're at school or just making sure that you get adequate medical care.
Yeah.
Right, that they
yeah.
look at your kid like they looked at everybody else's kid,
right,
and care with the same level.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm.
So what can we do as a community to try to address this? Let's circle back to that, because to
Absolutely.
Me, that's the issue. I mean, you can talk about nationally, and it's like It's like moving the Titanic. But what can we do in this neighborhood to make a change that has a lasting legacy here?
Absolutely. Sharing that empathy, you know, that love that fathers have for their sons and mothers have for their sons and daughters and families and everybody. Remembering that we are part of a larger collective, and it's not just this house or this church, but that we're all here together. And so viewing each other as other human beings, not limiting to our perspective, like, you know, this is the way I see things. And that's great. Everybody ought to have a perspective.
Sure.
But I always figure that whether it's dealing with our loving spouses or friends or neighbors, if you just take a moment and think about what it is that they see and they hear, whether it's from us or in the situation, and then address it in that way as opposed to becoming defensive. And I think that happens in all kinds of walks. So whether, like I said, whether it's in a neighborhood or it's in a school or a church community or a social gathering, taking the time to do that, and then making sure that our professionals, our public safety professionals, our peace officers, our doctors and nurses, our teachers, everybody that we count on in society, that instead of bringing this perspective that we as individuals may have, that we look at it from their perspective.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that at that point, we'll find that people are a lot less threatening. Maybe they're caught up in something that they actually need some help in, or would just like to be able to be, you know?
Yeah.
To be able to enjoy the same rights and privileges as other folks.
Sure.
And are worried about that.
Right? Yeah.
You know, it was this last, one of the murders with Ahmaud in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that was troubling. That was so troubling. You know, for lots of folks who are black or minorities, when you worry about, you know, police interactions, you know, so that's something that we know is out there, right? Mm-hmm. You worry about the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
The idea that people who literally live across the road from you are going to hunt you down and shoot you, you know, that's every parent's nightmare.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if we just start by, and it sounds trite, but loving each other a little more and a little better, that would make great strides in America and certainly in every community.
You know, it strikes me that as you're saying that, a lot of it is we spent as a society, I guess I'm on a soapbox here, we spend so much time talking at each other instead of listening, right? Listening, understanding where you're coming from, where I'm coming from, and what that's how you seek the solution, right?
That's right.
You have to. That's how you get the empathy is listening first and not presuming that I know what you're feeling or you know what I'm feeling.
That's
right.
That's exactly right.
So, man, we're like psychologists here.
We are. They should put us in charge.
I think they should. Well, Rod, thanks for joining us today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This has been fantastic.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.